welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to episode 18. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined by...
I'm Ben Tully. You can check out Smuggler's Den at a number of different locations, including emailing us at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/thesmugglersden. And you can catch Tiny streaming and occasionally myself with him streaming live at twitch.tv/tinygrimes.
I don't know if you noticed this, Ben, but my number of followers has skyrocketed since you started streaming with me.
Well, because they finally have good people playing on the stream.
See, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if it was the witty banter they were tuning into, or they were just sick of me beating up on random people playing random test decks.
I think it actually has to do with the fact that when I'm in the stream typing terrible criticisms of you while you play, or while we're playing, everybody's just tired of seeing you make these horrific mistakes. Like, so they want to see a top level player who doesn't make a mistake every turn that could be game ending. I think that's what it is.
You think that's what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
How many times have you beaten me on the stream? I'm just curious.
I think all the times I've played you.
I don't think that's accurate. I actually have no idea how many times you've beat me on the stream, but I'm pretty sure that's not right.
No, I'm pretty sure that's right.
Pretty sure that's not. So yeah. One of our loyal viewers can go back through the archives and email the show and let us know who's right and who's wrong. And since I'm married, I'm really used to being wrong. All right. So anyone who wants to come see our witty banter in person, we're having a tournament August 24th. That's a Saturday at Game Empire. I believe we're going to start at 11 a.m. Make sure you check with the store or with our Facebook page to figure out the exact date. The exact time. We will be hammering that out this weekend. But either way, it should be a great time.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting. We're going to have a Lee kit up for grabs, so that means there's going to be a sweet playmat. Game Empire is really great, so they've already purchased the game kits for us, and so the cost of entry is actually going to go towards prizes, potentially like stuff like in-store credit or things of that nature.
You know why that is?
Because they're awesome.
Because they're awesome.
Yeah.
But I think we've made that abundantly clear through the first 18 episodes, or I guess the first 17. So, Ben, we talked about the new FAQ a little bit on our live streaming episode last week. But real quick, when you saw that TOs could not play in their events, this is what I remember you saying.
Well, it's not just – it's not
– Does that sound accurate?
God, that's terrible.
You didn't like that?
Horrible reference.
Oh, is that from the prequels?
Yes, it's from the prequels.
Oh, I thought it was when...
No, it's like one of the most laughable moments in the prequels.
What part is that, though?
That's the end of like episode 3, and Vader's just found out that he's been turned into Vader.
I thought it was when he picked up Palpatine and threw him in the well after he was lightning.
Wait, in the what?
Whatever, in the shaft.
In the well? What is this, like 1915, like middle of America? It's like, Lassie, go get somebody's help. The Emperor's fallen down the well.
Shut up. Yes.
Anyway, and so, I mean, you don't mean all events. I mean, it says in the tournament rules that the TOs can play in their local events.
Which don't matter.
Well, I'm just pointing out, it's not like somebody should show up and be like, you can't play in this. It's Saturday, August 24th. Oh. You're not allowed to play, Tiny Grimes.
Yeah, like, that would be really bad.
That would be bad. But as opposed to not being allowed to TO the regional, I mean, that's a rough thing to say to a young game.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is there were regionals that had problems. Most of those were regionals run by dudes at stores who didn't know what they were doing or did know what they were doing and did shady things for their friends that were in the tournament. I don't actually know of a single incident where a TO rewarded himself. I've heard that maybe there was one, but that seems to be much more the minority versus tournaments that were run by clueless people who completely screwed them up. Now, tournaments that were run by TOs that were in the tournament that were top-level players were probably the smoothest tournaments. So it's a really weird ruling.
I mean, so there's a lot of stuff that goes along with this, right? So we both play in Game of Thrones regionals, obviously, when they come around. And
some of us win them.
Some of them. Oh, that was harsh.
Do you like that?
That was really mean. I'm going to cry a little bit. And so for the, especially for the big ones, right? In the big ones, so Kingdom Con and KubaCon, in both those instances, the TOs didn't play.
Hmm. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yes. Definitely. Krause
didn't play in Kingdom Con. Yeah. And then Eric didn't play in KubaCon, right? So, I mean, it does happen, but these were events that had 30 to 40 people in them, right? It's not
like 55, I think.
Right. And so taking what we know about what happened for the Star Wars regional, there were so many Star Wars regionals, it was fairly diluted this year. You would have 6 people show up.
Right.
And I think a good TO, right, would bow out if there was an odd number of people. But in a situation where there's an even number of people and he's the 6th person, to say that that TO can't participate in a 6-person tournament as it is, you know, isn't really promoting the game in any way. It's essentially punishing people who have gone out of their way to learn the rules, who want to participate and like encourage people to play, and then have them to be the number one person out and not play.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a really kind of salt in the wound type of thing to do for FFG. So now it's going to happen. Right. Like, so for example, for us, right, you know, we had a regional at Game Empire. We were both kind of co-running it. Or you weren't even there. I was co-running it with one of the people playing it. So he was a member of the store. He was an employee of the store. He was also playing in it. I was the TO officially for it. But, you know, it was this whole thing of like next year he won't be able to either play or we'll have to get somebody else. Either way, somebody else, it's going to be somebody who doesn't know all the rules of the game.
Yeah. And it doesn't fix the problem. I mean, if the problem is you don't want shady people running tournaments, well, guess what? Shady people are going to find out ways to be shady. You know, you're just going to have your brother run the tournament or your wife or your buddy who doesn't know what he's doing. And then when there's a ruling problem, he's going to have to come to you. Either way, you're still able to be shady.
I mean, I think it's just something that you don't hear as much about in the Game of Thrones community. And I think it's because not only were the number of, you know, it's probably something to do with the number of players. It has something to do with the number of regionals. So there's probably a third as many, or, you know, 75% as many Thrones regionals as there were Star Wars regionals. And it seemed like at least for the Star Wars or the Thrones regionals, all of those people seemed to be on the, at least part of the greater community. And so they would check in and figure out how the events are normally run. And kind of right. Have a better idea. Like, yes, they followed the FFG rules, but the FFG rules really aren't very well at describing how like the tournament should flow and like the point scorings and like Swiss pairings. Like the description of Swiss pairings in the FFG tournament rules is atrocious. Like, yeah. I still don't know if I could figure out how to run a Swiss tournament with those rules. And so you take that and you add it to like, they wanted to have a lot of Star Wars regionals, so they really like gave it to anybody who asked. And those people aren't checking in with the community, so they're just kind of filling in the rules where they, you know, you have people who work in stores that play a lot of Magic. And in Magic, you play 3 games in an hour. Like, that's right. Just how you do it. That's how you decide who wins that one match, right? So it's not uncommon for, you know, a TO to be like, okay, well, I don't know what this actually means in the tournament rules, so I'm just going to fill it in how I feel like it. insert this random thing, and it ruins the tournament experience for everybody who showed up.
Yeah, and they have that clause in the rules that's like...
The TO can just make up anything they want.
Right, like we went to a Thrones regional where, you know, we traveled 5 hours and stayed the night and talked to the shop owner the night before, and we were like, hey, you know, how are you going to run the regional? And he told us, and we were like, well, that's not really how most of the Thrones regionals are run. You know, we suggest this. And he goes, I don't know if you've looked in the rule book. It says I can do whatever I want. And we're like, oh, wonderful. And he was actually fine, and it worked out great. But if you are a shady character to start with, and then you have a clause like that where it's just like, hey, shady guy, do whatever you want, it gets pretty dicey.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be really the first thing that FFG should look at. They should change that rule. It should be like I know they do it in there to make it so that if at the end of the day there's an argument between a player and the TO, the TO can have a final say. Right. I mean, I understand it. Like, you have to have that in some degree.
Yep.
There's going to be issues that show up. You have to give somebody the power to make the final decision. But it means that the person who's running the event doesn't really need to know all the rules.
Right.
They can just make a decision, right? They've read that. They read that one line and they're like, oh, okay. So like, if something comes up and I don't know the answer, I can just make it up.
Right. And it allows you, because of that line, like there was that event that was going to have 5 rounds. And then after 3 rounds, the guy was just like, yeah, it's getting a little bit later than I wanted it to be. My buddy's in first. Tournament's over. Tournament's right. over. Thanks for coming, everyone. And they're like, what are you talking about? He's like, right here in the rule book. I can do whatever I want. Just did it.
Right.
So,
yes. So the question is, that is definitely
what would you rather have? That guy running your tournament or Ben and I? And if you're choosing TOs can't play in the events, you're not getting Ben and I.
Right, I'm not gonna run a regional if I can't play in it, especially with my low ability to actually win them. I need all the chances I can get.
Yeah, mine is the low ability to play in them. We had like 100 of them in Southern California.
I think it was 102.
Times. Yeah, and I only made it to 2 of them, and even the second one was a bit dicey.
Right.
So yeah, I'm gonna put it out here now. I will not be running them. What that also means is when the tournament season rolls around and you have to sign up for them, there's going to be less because individuals won't be able to do that. They'll have to go to the store. The store will actually have to do it because they'll have to appoint someone as the TO. It's going to be really rough. Hopefully they'll switch that.
I mean, it's a long way off. There's at least another 2 FAQs before that happens.
Yep.
I'm not concerned. I think that they'll get enough feedback from the community to be like, we don't want this.
Yeah.
For them to, you know, at least think about it and realize that it's probably not the best case scenario.
Yep. It's funny. I've heard a lot of people, last thing we'll say, I've heard a lot of people say like, well, with Gen Con and Worlds coming, this is a real issue. It's not an issue at Gen Con.
Because
they
run
Worlds.
It.
Yeah. FFG employees run it. Now, I would love it if they let Nate French TO it and run it. I think it would be great to run up against the designer of the game in the event, but FFG does not do that. You don't have to worry. Nate won't be playing in it. He'll just be the TO.
Right. I mean, and so I think it's really silly that they made this ruling right now with the next major tournament being Nationals, because they're going to be there. Like, so what does it matter? It's like to say this for like, it's almost like a moot point, right? Because essentially all they're saying is this is happening for regionals. Nationals and Worlds, it's never been like, you know, Tiny shows up and is like, well, I'm going to TO this one.
Yep. I'm TOing Worlds, everybody.
TOing Worlds. Sorry. No. Nate, just sit down. Everybody here at the FFG store, just sit down. I'll handle this. Don't worry about it. So I don't know why they
paired up against
like that.
Another low. I got paired down 7 rounds in a row. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
I mean, that's just funny to me.
Yep.
All right. They felt the need to put it out there at this point in time.
I do want to make a mea culpa about the FAQ. I reacted to the change from 4 to 8, and I still don't like the change. I think it doesn't allow you to mitigate your losses in a luck-oriented game. But what I said was that now you could play a straight control deck that doesn't blow up objectives, But that doesn't, it's interesting how that works. Like, if you are a mid-level player and your dream is to top whatever, get your play mat and go home, then yes, that is a totally viable strategy. Make a control deck. Don't worry about if it ever blows anything up. But if you are a player who doesn't play to get to the top eight, but plays to win the event, it is still really important that you build a deck that does well in the matchup environment, because almost all games, once you get to the top eight, are going to be 3-2 games. It's very rare.
5-4 now.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sorry, 5-4. It's going to be very rare that you 8-0 another top player. Like, that's just not that common.
Yeah, no, it's going to be I'm glad to hear you come back off of that terrible position, because I was telling you from the beginning that it wasn't the case. But it was – I forget exactly. Do you remember who it was? Somebody in the stream was like, Tiny, what about the top eight when the tiebreaker really matters? And you're like, oh, yeah.
What now?
Like, I can't just get and be in first place,
right?
Like, overall, and be like, hey, I'm in first place overall. I'm good to go. I'm going to win this event, because as soon as you get to the top eight, those tiebreakers matter.
Yep. And everyone plays events differently, but that's how I play both Game of Thrones and Star Wars, is I play to have decks that will do well in the top eight. Like, I always tell people, especially in Game of Thrones, I see these decks, and I'll tell someone, that's a Swiss deck that will not win a tournament. And they're always like, what do you mean? Rah, rah. Say, yeah, well, it has these tricks in it, but by the time you get to the top eight, people shouldn't know your tricks, but guess what? Everyone's going to know your tricks.
Right.
You can't have a deck that's completely reliant on the surprise factor. It has to actually be a good, efficient deck as well.
Are you saying people are colluding there, Tiny?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I don't really feel like it's usually collusion. It's more like someone will say, oh, did you see so-and-so's running this card? Who runs that card? That's so cool. And then by the end of the day, that's just kind of spread around. And yeah, it is collusion, but it's a weird collusion that's really hard to regulate. Like, the only way around that is to be like, all right, everyone else is thrown out of the tournament because everyone's been talking about it, so Jim now wins. You're the only guy left. Good job.
I would think the only way to actually do it is to implement a no talking between rounds, so everybody has to just remain silent. It's a silent tournament landscape, right? So you have to play silently, except for when you're talking about actions, and you're not allowed to talk in between rounds, and that'll solve the problem.
Yep, and you have to
maybe FFG can provide little booths.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a soundproof booth, so people will go in there after they're done, or maybe they'll play in there, and then like a little divider comes down when they're done playing, so they're separate until the start of the next round.
That's pretty cool. I like that. It sounds kind of elaborate, though.
I don't know. I mean, they never just do it in like a crowded room on like these like plastic tables where you're like elbows to elbows with other people. That never happens.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We have a Magic tournament starting. Your table just went in half. Sorry, guys. If you could sit on laps, that'd be great.
Right.
Yeah, that never happens. All right, Ben, what are your thoughts on Edge of Darkness? We've had it, what, 2 weeks now? It feels like 2 months now for some reason.
I have been playing nonstop. Nonstop.
Yeah. And what's your
It'll be 3 weeks this week.
What's up?
It'll be 3 weeks this week.
3 weeks. All right. So what are your just your initial thoughts so far?
So post-initial thoughts, right? We're now into like intermediate thoughts.
Yeah, I guess so. Your reactions. Your reactions to what's happening. I got one for you.
Yeah, I was going to say. What?
Scum seemed decent, but capture scum seemed terrible. Like, if you build your deck as a capture deck, I just don't think it's viable right now. I think you have to build a scum deck as a control deck. It can have some capture in it, but it can't be like, I'm going to capture 26 cards and move them around with Slave One's pod and do this and that. Like, that doesn't seem to be all that viable to me.
Yeah, the thing with scum is still, and the people have talked about this, like I think for like the last 2 weeks, every day I've logged into Card Game DB, there has been somebody who's like, and this is why scum isn't viable. And they're all kind of falling in on the same line of thought, which is the scum objectives are one of the few is the only affiliation where the synergy happens cross objective.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get objectives where there's a good card in it, that works really well with a good card in this other objective. And so in theory, that shouldn't be a problem, but it means that when it comes to deck building, you're locked, right? Like if you want to see that combo, you need two copies of that objective set. And if you're really, you know, so that's already dedicating 40% of your deck to one objective set with one set of a combo. And if you don't see that combo and you're relying on it, then you're essentially boned.
Yeah, that's why the deck that I've built for Scum, which I like a lot, is not reliant on comboing with each other and really comboing with capture. It's more just a lot of one of pods that have decent units in it. You know,
and when you say the deck that I built, you actually referring to the deck that I built.
And then you
changed the pods that we discussed about changing after I had done all the playtesting with the other pods. And you were like, what do you think about this change? I was like, yeah, I was actually thinking about making that change. You're like, okay. And then you sat down the next day on Octagon. You're like, look at this deck I made. I made this one change to this one pod.
See, that's not entirely true, though. The first thing is we talked about lucrative contracts, and you were adamant that it was unnecessary. And yeah. I was adamant that it was necessary.
I still think that lucrative contracts is still not necessary. See, I think the only good change in that deck was the change from Boss to Greedo, which we had talked about already. And I still think that that ninth spot, be it lucrative contracts or Slave One, still doesn't really have that big of an impact on
the
deck.
See, that's where I think the decks are totally different. If you don't have lucrative contracts, I think you have a much greater chance to just lose to the unblockable deck, where this gives you outs in that early game where if you draw your corrupt official, you just laugh at them as they go, aha, I got the perfect objective set up. A sleuth for four, and you're like, corrupt official. And then usually you're able to win that game because then you're able to sort of get a lot of little units out really quick, and they lost that initial punch at you. And that's why I made the change. I played an unblockable deck two times in a row, lost horribly, put in lucrative contract, and was like, oh, okay, now I can survive that early round matchup.
That's fine. That's fine. I'll give you that. I had never played a Sleuth Scout deck with that deck. So yeah, it was not something I was playtesting with.
Right, and that to me it was what was the reason for the change. But we can call it the Ben deck, the Tiny deck, Ben's deck, the Tiny made better, whatever we want to call it. It's not based around capture. And that was Ben's idea. That part I really like. I had a deck that was much more based on capture. Ben basically came up with the idea of screw capture, let's just play a good deck. And then as we've tweaked it more, I think that is the way to go, because you get stuff like two Weequays, two Z95 Headhunters, which are phenomenal against the Falcon. If they bounce the Falcon back to their hand, they are really playing with fire. You know, you play one lucrative contract for two corrupt officials. You get a bunch of little guys with one copy of Greedo's pod. You can play two copies of Jabba so that you get more resources. Two copies of the Jawas, which are awesome. It gives you the Tatooine Crash. And then two copies of Feeding the Pit, which is phenomenal. We'll talk about it a little later. But I want to ask you a question about Tatooine Crash. If you're not playing it as a capture deck, let's say right away you get Tatooine Crash. Are you capturing cards every single turn with the Crash, Ben?
I'll probably start off capturing cards because I want to turn those Weequays on.
Yes.
As you learned in the one test game you had against me, you're like, yeah, I'm not going to look at me. You're like, look at me. I'm not going to capture your card. It's part of my plan so that you don't go attack that objective. And then you drew and you're like, except that I want to play this Weequay and I can't right now.
Yeah. Except for I do have to do one. So that's what I've been doing with it is early game. I only capture one card. Unless, of course, I see they're playing Renegade Squadrons pod, then I might capture more so that the Weequays can always be turned on. But the point is, I don't really want a pile of cards at the Crash so that they can just say, like, oh, cool, I'll go knock down the Crash and get, you know, 14 cards back late game, or probably, like, four. And this is the way I'm looking at it. If you're pulling the bad cards off their deck, then you're just whittling their deck for them. If you're pulling off the good cards, it feels great until late game when you give them a handful of good cards. It's like they just top decked all the cards they needed. It feels like a lose-lose scenario.
Yeah.
I really tend to not put a lot of cards on there for that reason, which I think is counterintuitive. I think most people, when they see Scum, they're like, yes, capture. I'm going to capture all their cards. And the way I play Scum is I don't capture their cards. It's just not worth it. It's just giving them a target to get their cards back. And I think that's why capture isn't that great. Now, if you can play with all the right combo like you were talking about, and you build a deck around it, and you move all the cards down to feeding the pit, and then you eat them all, then yeah, then it's phenomenal. But then you're right where Ben said that you have to run all these objectives, you have to get them all out just right, and you're really locked into a certain deck that I'm not sure is entirely... It's viable, but it's not top-tier viable.
So I guess my question, Tiny, to you is when you go to the tournament on, you know, a couple weeks from now, is that the deck that you're going to bring to play? Is that what you think is the most competitive dark side deck right now?
No, I don't think it's the most competitive dark side deck. I mean,
what?
I think
that is so heartbreaking, isn't it?
We've been waiting all this time. I've designed a new deck called Sith Visions, which I think is the top deck, which we will get to a little later.
Yeah, but isn't that, I was going to say, isn't that sad that we've waited all this time for Edge of Darkness to make Scum viable?
Right.
And we have a deck, it's pretty good, but it's not a top tier deck.
It's really sad that neither Smugglers or Scum have a viable tier one deck.
I don't think that's true.
Really?
Yeah.
Did Smugglers get good cards?
I feel like Smugglers got some good cards. I think they might have a couple tier one decks.
Yeah, you might be right on that one. So let's go there. So what are our thoughts on Smugglers? Totally broken or just kind of broken?
Mostly totally broken.
Yeah. Yeah. The Falcon, I'm just deciding more and more that if I have characters in my deck, the Falcon goes in whether it should or not. It's just a phenomenal card.
Yeah, we covered it last time in the podcast. That objective set is just amazing.
Yeah.
And you don't even need characters in the deck, do you really? I mean, because the ruling has come down from Nate that you can return the Falcon to your hand if you don't have a target in your hand to put into play.
Yep.
Which is crazy. If you have a target in your hand, like if there is a character or a droid in your hand, you have to play it. But if there isn't, the Falcon just comes back to your hand and sits there.
Yep. And that's,
which I think is not intuitive.
See, I kind of like that. I mean, you're paying 5 to cycle this card, and its icons aren't so ridiculous.
Really? Is that what you're going to say?
Well, you also have to win an edge battle, and the Falcon only has edge 1 and not like edge 6, so it's possible to lose one.
Right.
Yeah, no, the Falcon is real, real good. I've been coming up with some really cute ways to try to kill the Falcon, where I'll do stuff like put a heat of battle in, try to win the edge battle like with a Navy deck and have heavy fire in my hand.
Right. So that the one blast icon that they think is, so the Falcon would only go up to 2, actually suddenly goes up to 3.
Exactly. So I've been trying to do tricky things like that. They're like, there was another game where I did a Vader choke before the battle and put a damage on him. And they're like, wow, why would you do that? I was like, well, I don't have any other good targets. And they're like, I'm just going to bounce them. And I was like, uh-huh. And then I did the double heat of battle, but they twisted it.
It didn't work.
But I thought I was all clever and cute. But there's,
you just made it obvious.
Right, I know, exactly. I felt like I had to, because if I did the double twist, only a fool with Vader out would just be like, sure, take an action. That's cool.
Right.
Like, you're just not going to do that.
I still don't hear. I'm looking at the wording of the Falcon right now, and I'm still not entirely sure how we get to a ruling where you don't have to have a target in your hand.
What's the wording again?
Return this unit to your hand to put a character or droid unit into play from your hand.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you're paying a cost.
Right, return it to your hand. And then you can fail to find a character.
Right, you can fail to do the other half. Like, you have to try it. You paid the cost, now you have to play it, but you can't. And so then it can't.
So it would have to be worded the other way around. It would have to be put a character droid unit into play from your hand to return the Falcon to your hand.
Yep, yep, exactly.
Got it. Ooh.
Yep. So, yeah, that's a...
FF2 wording, baby.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And it makes... Like, I don't know if it's intentional. Like, that makes the Falcon really awesome. And I'd rather that than have another Boba Fett, right? Like, I'd rather the Falcon was kind of broken good than just unplayably bad.
And I don't think it's broken good. It is really, really strong. I mean, it can't get locked down. It can't have, like, serious amounts of damage done to it. But it is 5. It is literally going to be, except for in extreme cases where you have, like, 9 resources on the table, it is probably going to be the one card you play a turn.
Yeah, it's really a it fits amazing into a longer game deck. Like, the new build of, you know, Han, Chewie, Falcon stuff has a lot of resources. Like, I've had games where I've had 9 resources out.
Right. I've had games where I've had 9 resources, too.
And you just get to that late game, and you're playing, like, Falcon and Chewie. I'll strike with Falcon. I'll drop in Luke. And they're just like, how do you beat this deck? Like, it's not possible to beat it.
But, I mean, that's... In that scenario, right? I mean, it rarely happens where you get to that point where you have 9 resources. You have this situation where it's not any less kind of overpowered or destructive at that point. I mean, if your opponent has 9 resources, right, and even if the Falcon wasn't in the meta, they'd still be playing – they would have just played Chewie and Luke by themselves.
Like, right, and like already, trust your feelings. Also.
Right, and they would have had room for the event. So having the Falcon and playing another unit – you know, you probably keep some of the tricks from happening on the board. Yep. But, I mean, I don't think it's any more kind of tilted and brokenness land than, like, a first-turn Han Solo.
Yes. Or like, a first-turn Vader.
A first-turn Vader or anything like that. I think that in those scenarios, you're right. That they're very, very difficult scenarios to overcome.
Yeah.
And it really puts your opponent on a really strong footing. But I don't know how you get around that. Like, it just is going to happen sometimes. It doesn't regularly, and maybe sometimes you can mitigate it, but it happens to you as equally as it happens to your opponent, even if it doesn't feel like that.
Yep. The question I'm having for smugglers is, do you play the max protector build where you play with Jedi and you run 2 copies of Guardians and you run 2 copies of Luke? Or do you say, I'm using Lando because Lando's freaking crazy. His pod is amazing. And that's really become one of the big meta issues for me is which direction do I go? Do you have a preference out of those two builds?
I've been playing pretty much exclusively the Smuggler's Protection.
Yeah.
Which is the Luke and Protector build.
Did you just name a deck?
Maybe.
Oh my goodness, the ego on you. It's out of control. Is that how you usually say that?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a really good deck.
I've been
playing that
deck
as well. I actually did something crazy. Get your flog out. I guess it wouldn't be a flog, would it? Get your scourge out.
Cat of 9 tails.
Yes, get your cat of 9 tails out. I am running an 11-pod light side deck.
I remember this. You put in the Renegade Squadron Mobilization as an 11th pod.
Yep. I just splashed in an Echo Caverns because that card is phenomenal. And I get it pretty regularly. The draw is pretty good in that deck. And every time I get it, I'm like, yeah, this is why I'm splashing it. Like, it's winning me the game again. And I keep thinking, what do I take out? And if I take out 1 Guardian pod, I could probably go down to 2 Guardians. It would be uncomfortable. But then you're losing your second copy of a cancel in 3PO. You're losing a lightsaber deflection. You're losing a Twist of Fate. Like, that pod is just still...
And a Secret of Yavin 4.
Exactly. It's still one of the best pods in the game. It's really hard to just pull out. And then all the other pods are, like, uber crazy good. I can't pull any of those out.
Right.
So... That's what I've been running with now. But I used to run the Lando build, And man, that build was fun. It's just really hard. If you don't get Wookiee life debt, it becomes a little bit dangerous. And Sith direct damage decks can do some serious damage to you.
Yeah, I mean, the Protector deck can be really, really strong. I've had some crazy board setups with it. I've had some less than crazy board setups with it. I had one game last week where I had all four of the Guardians of Peace and three of the Wookiee Warriors with life debt on the table. And I was like, so those were like the cards I saw for the first like four turns.
Oh, man.
So I had like nine characters on the board. None of them had a blast damage.
Right.
But then I drew up into like Luke and then Han and then the Falcon and then dropped in Chewbacca and won the game. But like,
and then the game ended.
But like, it was one of those times where I was like, if I see another Protector.
Yep. It's got a lot of Protectors. The beauty is those Wookiee Warriors, though, you can usually find a way to damage them.
Yep.
And that's what's really cool about them. And then they gain a blast. So, yeah, that's a good deck. So overall, my thoughts on Edge of Darkness are it was really good for the game. I'm happy to see so much diversity. I haven't actually seen a lot of top-level deck diversity. Most of the dark side decks that I've tried have been fun, have been decent, but they haven't been able to compete with the two top light side decks that are wildly different, and that's really the problem. It can't auto lose to either the unblockable deck or the smuggler's protection deck. If it auto loses to either, you're in trouble because you're going to see both. So it becomes more difficult for the dark side, but I have been enjoying it. And I think there will be more decks as people put more and more time into building them.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Edge of Darkness. I'm really happy that the card pool is so much bigger than it was. I like the diversity of the decks I've been seeing. Even if some of them aren't that competitive, I think there's still a lot of fun uses that you can get out of it. I would rank overall Edge of Darkness like an 8 out of 10. In terms of impact and quality and overall Star Wars goodness.
Why only an 8? What would have made it a 10?
It is only an 8 out of... So it would have been a 10 out of 10 if Scum and Villainy was as perfectly harmonized as the Smugglers and Spies would be. And it would be a 9 out of 10 if it didn't introduce broken deck mechanics. And so it becomes an 8 out of 10 because I really like all of the cards, but I think that there's a couple stuff that maybe could have been done better. But that's like really, really harsh and critical. I love the fact that there are more Star Wars cards.
Yeah. Okay. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. There is a deck that comes out of this box that I think is going to be kind of bad for the game, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, overall, I really like the set. We'll have to see. We'll have to see if that deck ends up being so detrimental to the game that it downgrades the overall rating of the box. But right now, I'd give that box a solid 2 thumbs up. All right, so instead of being all secretive and weird about the deck, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the metagame shift. So before Edge of Darkness, it felt like to me, and tell me if you agree with this, that dark side drove the meta. When we got the core set, you opened it and you went, Palpatine, Vader, Burn. Let me see if you can beat that. I'm going to sit here and do nothing. Can you beat that? And that deck really shaped the meta because if you put out a Han, he instantly died. And so people had to really work hard to figure out, how can I compete with this deck? And it took a long time for people to find good light side decks. We used to see all those threads. Dark side is broken. Dark side's unbeatable. I've played the Sith deck 49 times and never lost. Does that feel like where the core set was when it came out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely the way that the game felt. Dark side was pushing things, right? You had to, if you were building a light side deck, you had to build it in consideration of what was the current flavor of the week or month. For the dark side deck, you needed to have protectors. That's where the protector pod became such a huge kind of auto include into the meta, was because the dark side was governing it to be so. Like, if you didn't have a way of protecting your big heavy hitters, then you lost the game.
Yep, you might as well not play him at that point. All right, so I see Coming Out of Edge of Darkness as the reverse happening. That the light side was able to just kind of look at pods and go, yeah, okay, so I just stick these pods together and I have a great deck and I don't even really have to work hard at building it. And it seems like two amazing decks come out of that. And you have what we've already talked about, the Han Chewy Falcon, whether you make Smuggler's Protection or you put in Lando. So depending on what you want to do, you have that build pre-made for you. And then you have the deck that shifts and drives and shapes the meta more so, I think, even than that core Sith deck, those darn unblockables.
Wow. I still like the name, the Super Sleuths.
Oh, yeah. No, I do, too. I think unblockables is a general description. And then each of the different builds gets a different name.
Super Sleuth.
So let's say this. Darn you, Neil, the real deal, a.k.a. the deck wizard, for making your super sprint so public. Smuggler sprint. I had made a different version. I was calling the Smuggler's Run because it's slower than Neil's version. But I had decided not to make that public yet to see where the meta was going to go. And now everyone and their mom, dad, and even their dog are playing some version of the Smuggler's Sprint, the Smuggler's Run, or some other version.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Somebody asked the other day in the stream what I thought would happen. So supposedly, there seemed to be the implication, I have actually followed this up, that all of the spots have sold out for FFG's national Star Wars tournament.
They have. So, our friend Chris tried to sign up yesterday, and there are no spots.
And so that's 120 people.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. And I forget who it was exactly. It might have been Pojo, TMG in the stream or something like that. Either, if it wasn't Pojo, I apologize. If it was Pojo, there's a shout out. Woo!
We love you, Pojo.
The question was, how many people do you think are going to show up to that running a light side deck that is the Super Sleuths? And I was like, I don't know, a lot. His argument is he thinks that there'll be less than 50 of the people will run it. But I don't know. I played a version of it yesterday, and it turned one of our mid-tier, very, consistent, strong players into this unbeatable, maniacal monster, where he was just like, and now I do 11 damage!
Yeah, that's what I don't like about it. I feel like...
You don't like it that other players have a chance to win?
Yeah, no, really. Like, what I don't like is this. The Rebel deck, I felt the same way, only it wasn't very consistent. So if a lower-level player was playing it, they were taking a big risk, right? Like, they were taking the risk of, I may auto-win, but there's a good chance I'm not, and then my deck's going to fall apart and I'm going to lose. And that's an acceptable risk. Like, if you think, I'm not an upper-tier player, but I want to be able to sort of, like, be able to shock some upper-tier players and win some games, that's a viable strategy. But with this deck, it's basically like, if you're not an upper tier player, oh, I'll take this deck that can beat upper tier players pretty consistently anyway. Like, it's not like the Rebel deck where it would fall apart, 8 out of 10 times. This thing, 8 out of 10 times comes off. And right. That's kind of a problem.
It's really strong. And I think we should just take a station identification break to talk about exactly what's in this deck.
Yes, let's see.
And so it's two of the Blockade Runner, it's two of the Sleuth Scouts, and then from there it kind of breaks down. So that's like the core of the deck. Yeah. I've seen people running from that point two Han Solo, two Millennium Falcon, two Defense of Yavin 4. I've seen versions that have run Lando. I've seen versions that didn't run the Falcon that have run Coulsera. There's a lot of options for those extra spots.
Right. And here's why. The way it works is you have the Blockade Runner and the Sleuth can't be blocked by people cost 3 or greater. And so then the rest of the pods are usually supplementing to take out the little guys. So like if you run Han's pod, you get both Swindled and Han himself who wrecks little guys. Coulsera has those X-Wings that can bounce little guys. Rebel Assault will kill them outright. You have all these ways to remove the little guys. So if the big guys can't block and there are no little guys, the sleuth and the blockade runner just walk in untouched. And if you have out your objective that gives them +2 for unopposed and +1 for being a smuggler, you're doing 5 right there and just blowing stuff up.
And you know, the defensive Yavin 4 objective comes with the astromech droid, so that gives you an extra blast that way. If you're running Colsera and you can win the edge battle, you can use Don't Get Cocky. That gives you 2 extra blasts. So you have this ability to like really just start punching down objectives from turn 1.
Right.
And it was becoming – so I just played this deck yesterday, trying both of the current kind of dark side builds I've been working with. And, you know, I'd be first turn. I'm like, all right, I'm doing all right. I got some resources. Here's Bib Fortuna. I'm going to put in the advisor,
Dark Advisor.
You know, I'm going to – you know, I have enough cards left in my hand to win an edge battle. This is going to be great. And then they're like, all right, I put in a blockade runner. I give it an astromech. Swindle your 1-2 cost guy, and I took out an objective. And I was like, yep. Cool. That's cool. All right, great. That was fun.
And that doesn't take any skill to do, right? It's just like you draw those cards, and you're like, cool. Here's a cool autoplay to give me an objective. Awesome.
Right. And then they're all like, oh, but don't worry, because now you'll be able to tactics me down. And I was like, you're right, I will. I'm going to tactics you down. You SOB, I'm going to come after you. Tactics them down, and then they play the operative. And it's like, oh, all right, well, there you go. I played brilliantly, Tiny. Like, all I needed was to keep the – like, he had a sleuth out and a blockade runner. And the sleuth had an astromech on it, but I was like, I'm not worried about the sleuth. Like, he can only do so much damage. I've taken out some of his objectives. I'm going to keep the blockade runner down. I put – 3 tactics on the blockade runner, and then you know what he played?
2 shadow operatives?
Two Chaos City operatives in a row.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, okay. That's the game. Thank you.
Yep. And it's very interesting because one way I found to deal with that is to not have focus tokens on anyone so that they can't operative your little guys. Like, that's one way around it, is you're just like, all right, well then here, take this. All my guys don't have icon or tokens. None of yours do. So now you have to have like 2 swindleds and something else because your operative doesn't work, which is a crazy thing to have to do, right? Like, I can't even try to tactics your dudes down.
Yeah. I mean, it's this huge change in how you have to play the deck. And it was, you know, I was still yesterday feeling out how to actually do that, right? Like, if you haven't played that deck multiple times to know, all right, so I'm not attacking. I don't use any of my resource guys as resources. I don't over tactics any of their stuff, and I just hope that they don't have swindles. I mean, it's just such a crazy way to have to play the game. Like, when you're staring at Vader in your hand, be like, well, this is worthless. I'm just gonna chuck this for an edge battle right here.
Yeah, and this is where what I don't like about the build. I don't mind that a deck shapes the meta. There's always going to be decks that shape the meta. That's just the way card games work. I just don't like that not only do you have to build decks to beat this deck, you have to play completely different, you have to mulligan differently and hope that you are right. Like, the point is, right from that first second, if you mess up your mulligan, you probably lost.
Right.
And that's a really difficult way to approach playing against the deck.
It's much different than, like, I got a bad draw, my opponent got a good draw. It's like, I can't hope for a good draw.
Yeah.
I have to hope for this draw that I would throw out every other game.
Right.
Except for this one time.
And the problem is,
and I'm sure there'll be plenty of people in, you know, there'll be plenty of people in the community who are like, well, that's just a different way to play. You have to know how to play. That seems fair, that, like, all of a sudden, like, the bat, you know, you just have to play your bad draws because they're better against this deck. And that's probably true, but it just seems like it's a very different game that you play. And when it rolls, it just rolls. There's almost no stopping it.
Well, and what's really hard about it is that if they put out the Rebel affiliation, then yeah, you do that. Like, either it's a different kind of Rebel deck, or it's that Rebel deck, and either one is fine. You're ready for it. But if they do a Jedi affiliation or a smuggler affiliation, What are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to play
You have no idea what's coming. If they're playing the Lando variant of it,
exactly,
it's going to look like a smuggler.
Exactly, and it's really tough. And then at that point, you're mulliganing into a bad hand because you think they're playing that deck, and then they don't. And then you're screwed now, not even because they're playing that deck, but just because that deck exists. The existence of that deck has now screwed you. And that's where I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that deck. At first, I wasn't, because to tell you the truth, I have not lost to that deck many times. I just completely shift my play style. All my decks now are built to beat that deck. And so it's okay, but it's still a pain. It's a real pain. And the tiebreakers are totally unfair, because you have to go way on the defensive to beat this deck. If you do beat the deck, they will get two down, and you'll get maybe one down. So even in victory, you're in a bad spot for tiebreakers. If I were going to Gen Con and I didn't think I was a top player, I would play that deck for sure.
So what are you suggesting to any player to play for their dark side deck against that deck? I mean, we've said this. This is going to come out on Wednesday this week. We're recording on a Monday. It's 2 weeks before Gen Con. We've now hyped it up so much, Tiny, that how can we not expect 100 people to show up with this deck?
Right.
What do you do?
Let me first put out a plea. Don't bring this deck. Don't bring it. Like, it's a dumb deck. But everyone's going to bring it anyway.
I'm pretty sure that you're just going to receive a ton of hate mail right there.
Yeah, and I don't care, because I'm not going to Gen Con. Like, bring the deck if you want. But I personally, I don't like to play the deck, and I don't like to play against it. So I just don't like it. I think others are going to disagree and say, oh, I really like to play it. And if you love to play the deck, then you should play it. And if you want to win an event and you feel like it's going to give you the best shot, then you should play it. I don't feel like it's the best light side deck. I feel like it's kind of gimmicky, but it's pretty darn reliable gimmicky. I want to correct one thing you said as we go into the deck that I've built that I think is the best dark side deck right now. And that's, you said you toss away Vader to edge battles against that deck.
No, I
feel like Vader is the most important card against that deck.
Right. I mean, you need it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I beat the deck.
You need Vader. It'd be awesome if you had his lightsaber.
Oh, God, yeah, I get that fairly regularly against that matchup, because I'm actually saving it. Usually I toss it, but in that matchup I save it.
Right. You get the lightsaber. You need to then hit him hard with the lightsaber start. I mean, a good thing with the lightsaber is once you have Vader with the lightsaber, you can cut down any one of their ships. Yep. Right, because the Blockade Runner only has 4 health. Or 3
health. What I like to do is, and they usually don't commit them either, so 4 Shockwave becomes a really good card. So I'll do something like 4 Shockwave them, Vader ping to kill a sleuth, Vader with his lightsaber to kill the Blockade Runner. Suddenly their board got set way back, and now they're reeling a bit.
Right. It does take a while to get to that point.
Right, and that's why I like to play the Protector version sometimes of the Smuggler deck, so that it's a little harder for them to do it. But yeah, the point is, you have to be able to survive those first 2 turns against the deck and be willing to give up objectives and just say, all right, like, I'm going for board stability right now. Like, if he gets 2 objectives before I get the board stabilized, so be it. I'm going to have to win anyway, and not freak out and panic and just say, all right, that happened. As long as they don't get the 3rd one, I'm all right. All right, so the deck that I've been playing, I've been calling Sith Visions, and it's essentially the standard Sith Control pods. I now call Sith Control the standard 7. And so it's 2 Palpatine, 2 Vader, 2 Council of the Sith, and then that Force Wraith pod, I think, is an auto-include 1 copy for any Sith Control deck. The Force Wraiths are just phenomenal. It's really hard to take the Force from you when you have those guys. All right, so then the question was, how do I round out that deck? And I specifically did it to be able to handle both the Sleuth deck and the Smuggler's Protection deck. And so what I did is I put in 2 copies of Feeding the Pit. And the reason is because you get the Crate Dragon, who's great on defense or attacking against the Smuggler's Protection deck. You get Spice Visions, which, think about that for a moment. I strike with Palpatine. I spice visions Palpatine. That's really nice. Having six tactics icons that you get to lay down. Yeah, people are in trouble there. And also, I love the Almighty Sarlacc. The Almighty Sarlacc lets you play Vader's and Palpatine's turn one, which is really, really good. And I guess I should change that. Not just play them, but play them and not be screwed turn two.
You right.
Play them and still be able to take the icons off and then play other good cards, which is really, can be really difficult to deal with depending on the matchup. And Bip Fortuna is really good as a very flexible guy that you can use for a lot of resources if you want. Use him for one, spice visions him, then do three more. You can use him for his tactics icon. He's just a versatile guy. And then the last pod is the one that I'm still not, you know, completely locked down on, but because the sleuth deck is so popular, I've been using Greedo's pod because he gives you three little guys, and he gives you one more direct removal. And in this meta, I feel like direct removal is really important because when they can have seven guys with Protect out, if you can just go, Force Lightning Chewie, that changes the whole landscape of their board. They suddenly can't move everything through Chewie and then questionable contacts it off and wipe your board with Chewie. You just remove him, and now you can start knocking out the other Protect guys.
So then I have to ask you, Tiny, so if you have starting four objectives and you have the Emperor's Web in it, do you just not play the Emperor's Web anymore because it has four? So you don't even have to be a souped-up blockade runner. You can just be kind of like a moderately okay blockade runner and take it out in just one turn.
Yeah, the truth is I never played Emperor's Web anyway. I always considered it too easy to blow up that if I ever had a choice, I never chose it. So yeah, I definitely don't choose it in this current meta.
What if you, I had two the other day.
Yeah, then you're just in big trouble. Yeah, you're just in big trouble there, Ben. I don't know what to tell you.
Yep.
Choose neither. Just put two out and be like, come at me.
I don't even want that resource.
Yeah, I'm giving up on it. I don't think that's legal, but you could try it. Yeah, so far my results have been very good with the deck because it has a lot of little dudes. Greedo is really strong for two. And I was talking to somebody about the deck, and they were like, well, yeah, Greedo's great for two, but they just swindle him. And I'm like, have you been playing in the new meta? Like, you have to have guys that are two. Greedo's two is actually a bonus now rather than a negative.
Especially because he has three health and he does two damage if you win that edge battle. So exactly. You can kill a Sluice Scout and all that stuff.
They're very hesitant to attack with Sluice if they don't have their tricks. Like, I had a game where I dropped first turn, I think because of the Sarlacc, I was able to get out something like Greedo and two, like a Gamorrean Guard and someone else, two cost. And they didn't attack for like two turns, and they had Sluice out. And I was like, what is happening? And I realized, oh, they didn't think they could win the edge, and Greedo would just kill them all.
Right.
Yeah, the Greedo is phenomenal for two cost. I really underrated him. When I first saw him, I was like, yeah, that pod is one I will never play. But the meta has shifted to Greedo, and now Greedo's pod, I feel like, is almost an auto-include in every deck I make right now, with that Sleuth deck being the deck that's driving the meta.
Right. I mean, I think the part of it was everybody saw his text and thought that he took damage anytime you lost an edge battle, but it's only when he's in the engagement, which actually makes him much stronger.
Yeah, and I even had a game the other night where I lost an edge battle, and the person was like, yep, one damage on Greedo. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, you lost an edge battle. I was like, oh, you pulled a Tiny Grimes and didn't read the card. Well, let me you read the card now.
It seemed like it was a huge community movement.
Yeah.
That decided not to read the card, because I feel like everybody I played for weeks has assumed that Greedo just takes damage anytime you lose an edge battle.
I know, it's really funny. I think the same thing happened with Lobot.
No. I mean, maybe. I haven't seen these threads. I thought it was just you and Lobot.
No. I got it from a thread. There's these threads that are like, yeah, Lobot is awesome with Yoda because he turns on all his icons. And it is a little confusing. He says it makes them all edge enabled. And if you just think logically, like, that means the edge icons are enabled. But if you look in the rule book, Edge-enabled icons are specifically white icons. So he does the opposite of what a lot of people think he does.
He turns off everybody's. And so he's an interesting card if you think you can win that Edge battle on defense. You put him in as a defender. All of your opponent's icons, no matter who's in the battle, becomes Edge-dependent. You win the Edge battle. Your opponent does nothing.
Yeah, he seems fantastic against Navy decks.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's
Devastator
so...
rolls.
I was just thinking Devastator. I was just Devastator. Sorry, Devastator.
You did nothing.
You get nothing.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah. I really like Lobot's pod. Have I told you this?
I think you did, and I really don't like his pod.
And you know what? Here's the thing. Is I don't like his, like, weenie guys that he has in there, his Cloud City Wing Guards. I think they're terrible.
Yes.
Three for one health capacity is always a bad idea.
Yes.
But I really like Security Control Center as a way of putting shields on units as they come into play.
Yeah. I mean, so I think we're in total agreement. We both love Three Fists of the Pod.
Yeah.
The problem is you're going to see those Wing Guards because there's two of them and they only have one Force icon, and so it's really tough. Like, if you're going to run a Lobot deck, you're going to run two copies, so you have four just horrid cards in your deck, and it's really hard to deal with having, like, if it was only a one of and you only had like one copy of that Wing Guard, it'd be fine.
And there were two copies of the Control Center, that'd be fine.
Or even a regular card, like just a not awful card. But a 3-for-1, if
another Swindle.
Oh my God. Another Swindle and Lobot's pod is like an auto include in every deck. So probably a good idea they didn't put a Swindle in there. But yeah, having two just atrocious guys is real tough every time I look at Lobot's pod, I'm like, wow, can't believe I haven't tried to build a deck around this yet. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's why. That's why I haven't done it.
Right. Like,
those guys. Four of them. That's a pretty large percentage of your deck.
Mm-hmm. Too large.
Yep. Too large for me anyway. Anything else we want to do before card of the week?
And the pod quiz.
Yeah, and the pod quiz, of course.
Mm.
All right, Ben. What is your card of the week?
My card of the week this week comes from the Lando pod, but is not Lando himself. It's that very annoying 2-cost unit, Saboteur.
Oh, God, I hate that card.
I didn't even know that card existed the first time. It boned me.
The worst.
I had all of these resources. I was putting them all out, and I was like, yeah, this is great. Look, I put in a control room, and here's a Mahdi. Like, here's all these resources. And they're like, Saboteur? And I was like, oh, man, I purposely didn't even double tactics the control room, so I would have it next turn. I hate you.
Yeah, I remember watching that game. I
lost that game crazy bad.
Yeah, that was fun to watch.
Ugh.
Yep, that card is one of the reasons why I really don't want to play the Smuggler's Protection and I want to play the Lando build because it's just so tricky. You then have four Cloud City operatives. You get the two Saboteurs. That card's real good.
Yeah, it's very strong.
I think that's going to be a meta shaping card even. Like, if Lando's pod sees really heavy play and people are trying to choose between the Devastator and Death Squadron command stuff, they're going to go with the Death Squadron because that enhancement costs 3 and the control room costs 2.
Yep.
So we'll have to see how that shakes out.
Oh, I've already made that conscious decision several times.
Have I? Yeah. Well, did you say you have in your deck building?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, once you get hit by it once, you think every time.
You're like, fool me once.
Yep. You're like, wait, never, I remember now.
This never again.
Yep. Yeah, so my choice for this week is the Almighty Sarlacc. And that's because that card has won me tons of games. It's an enhancement you can put on any Tatooine objective. In Sith Visions, that means you're putting it on the pit, which has 2 resources, and it reads, enhance a Tatooine objective you control, action, damage enhance objective to remove 1 focus token from it. This lets you do some really cool stuff. So, like, you can go first turn, like first turn, play the Sarlacc on your pit. Then you damage the pit and you pull it off. Then you play a resource with the pit. You damage the pit, you pull it off. So now you have six resources on the board. Boop! There's Palpatine turn one. Or there's Vader turn one. It's ways to get your big guys out fast, and in this meta, that can sometimes be really critical and slow your opponent down. It's just a really cool card.
Yeah, it is. It is a lot of fun.
And I don't think I got to tell you this, and we sometimes have a pro play segment, and so I'm going to segue into I did a pro play this week with the Sarlacc.
I don't believe it, but go ahead.
So I had Palpatine on the board. I blocked with Palpatine. I had four damage on the pit. He was attacking the pit. He was going to blow it up. He had Han, so he did the ping damage, and he was going to targeted strike Palpatine. So I was like, okay, fine. I got to block with Palpatine. Pray I win the edge battle, because if I don't, Palpatine's dying anyway. Sure enough, I lose the edge battle. And so what I did is I actually pulled a focus off of the pit to blow it up before he could blow it up so that I could trigger Palpatine's response to go get like a force choke before he could kill Palpatine. And then he was able to kill Palpatine anyway, but the point is, had I let him strike first and he killed Palpatine, then blew up the objective, then I wouldn't have been able to get that extra choke in my hand.
So, did that choke help you win the game?
I believe so. I think I was able to draw like a Vader next turn and then choke out his Han. So I was pretty happy with that. It's one of those plays, and someone said before, there's no pro plays in Star Wars. They're all obvious. I disagree. I'm not saying no one would have seen that play, but it's not like that, you know, low-hanging fruit kind of play. You really have to think about exactly how this play is working out and all your triggers on the board. And so I was pretty happy that I was able to come up with that. So that was kind of a cool pro play, and it's all because of my beloved Almighty Sarlacc. Ben, I know you're going to be really excited about this.
Yeah, give it to me.
Wow. I'm pretty sure it is time for...
Phrasing!
Pretty sure it's time for the pod quiz, and I'm really sure that it is not my turn to be quizzed.
No. I have to say, though, I have been trying to remember, commit numbers to my memory, ooh, like the whole episode.
Wow.
That's... like. Because we've been talking about it, and I knew it was my turn. I still don't know which ones actually belong to which, but I have a better idea of the ranges.
That's really not right. The it's going to take me a moment because the random number generator has a specific pod it would like to generate, but it can't remember its number. boop, it just remembered. All right, Ben, pod 43.
Oh, God.
Yeah, those are the tough ones.
The ones in the
middle of the Hoth cycle, some random pod. Yep. You thought it was an Edge of Darkness.
I thought you were an Edge of Darkness.
Prepared for that.
I was.
Yeah. Cheaters never win, Ben. Yeah. And winners never cheat.
Sometimes. 43, huh?
43. I'll give you a hint. It's a pod.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's your hint.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So 43, I would have to say... So here's the problem. I can't remember off the top of my... So I think there are 36 objectives in the core set.
That seems correct.
Okay, so 43 would put this somewhere in like... So the first one was... five objectives.
Stop trying to use logic, Ben. Just randomly guess and look foolish.
So I think this is the first objective in the second force pack of the Hoth cycle.
Mm.
And I might be wrong. And I had to try and remember. And I think that means, I think this is Darth Vader's pod.
Mm. Is that your guess?
I think it's Darth Vader's pod.
So what number? Let's start with what number is it?
40, you said 43.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Good point. I gave you the number.
You gave me the number.
It is 43.
Is it Darth Vader's pod?
It is not Darth Vader's pod.
Mm. Is Darth Vader's pod right next to it?
I'm looking. It is not right. Oh, actually, I wouldn't know because I'm I'm looking at only the light side pods.
So this is a light side pod.
Oh, no. Too much information. Or an elaborate deke. I will say this. This is not Darth Vader's pod.
Mm. Do you know what number the Darth Vader's pod is?
I do not.
No, you still don't know.
I know that it's unplayable. No. It actually might be playable now in a trooper deck. I don't know.
Shoot. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I thought you might say that. I'll give you one card from it.
Okay.
First marker.
Oh, is it the Hoth Defenders one?
Yes.
Right, so it has two of the guys who have edge-dependent tactics and have blasters equal to the number of Hoth objectives you have on the table.
Yep.
And it has first marker, which keeps you from attacking vehicles from attacking the objective that you enhanced.
As long as it's Hoth, yep.
As long as it's Hoth. And then I don't have any recollection of what the other two are.
Do you remember what the objective is?
Nope, don't know that one either.
That one is sensors are placed.
Oh, okay, so it says the first card is shown face up.
Yep. And then the other two are the Echo Base.
Oh, and a shield generator.
Yep, and the shield generator.
I used to play that objective.
I know, it's one of the reasons why I picked it, so you'd feel foolish when you didn't get it.
I do feel foolish.
Well done by me, then.
Thank you for rubbing it in.
Yeah, it's one of these pods where...
I mean, that's one of the ones that, like, I played, like, the first week it came out, and I was like, I really love the shield generator. And I was like, screw these Echo Defenders. And that was the last I played it.
It's funny, because I kind of feel like the Echo Defenders are pretty good.
So, Tiny, I have a question.
Yeah.
Now that the episode's over, you just mentioned Darth Vader in a trooper deck. Would a dark side trooper deck stop a Sleuth Scout deck?
It might. Very well might. My problem with the trooper deck is it still seems like it struggles with Han Solo. And Han Solo is even more prevalent than he was before.
He's even in the Super Sleuth.
Right, exactly.
Super Sleuth deck.
So that feels like it's really going to be one of those, do they get Han early? Do you get Veers early? Do they get Han early and kill Veers early? Like, if you get Veers sitting there the whole game with, you know, the five Espo troopers and a bunch of other dudes, and you get all that out right away, and they're not playing my build of this loot deck with protectors, they're in big, big trouble. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a viable trooper deck. I don't know if it's a tier one deck that can beat, you know, the Smuggler's Protection deck, but it certainly seems like it would give the Sleuth deck a run for its money. So there you go. Everyone on the light side play the Sleuth deck. Everyone on the dark side play the trooper deck. And then we'll have a fun Gen Con.
Oh, my God. That would be such a weird Gen Con.
That would be the craziest Gen Con ever. Champion ran the Espo troopers and a trooper deck.
Right.
Yeah, that would be very surprising. The other problem with the trooper deck is all your key guys are going to be dying to rebel assaults. And so, it's fine against a sleuth deck to have that many little guys, but, like, they can just rebel assault Veers, and then all your little guys are kind of blah at that point. Yeah, so I don't know. Bottom line is, trooper decks could probably be good. I haven't built one yet.
I mean, I don't think I can build one to play in the tournament on Wednesday that we're having, but...
Why not?
Because I want to win something for
this
time.
Dude, that's how you do things, Ben. Build these crazy decks the night before, and you're like, in my limited one-game test, it was great.
Yeah, no, I want to win something for once. I want to come away feeling like I haven't put all this time into this game and squandered it, essentially.
Well, I will be rooting for you, that's for sure, Ben.
Right.
I'll still beat you, but nope. I will be rooting for you as you are losing to me.
That's wrong.
No, that's wrong?
Nope, you're going to lose to me.
All right, man. I look forward to that opportunity. What will actually probably happen is we'll both lose very early in the tournament like we usually do.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, yeah. Like, I'll lose to John Barber. He'll be like, I played one league game just so I could get in, and I'm the bottom seed, and then I beat you. And then I'll cry for a while. But just so everyone knows, We've talked about our league in the past. Our league has gotten enormous. It's up to 17 paid members. We had like 3 or 4 or 5 other people sort of flit in and out. So this league has had well over 20. It really is a testament to going to the same spot every single week for how many months? 6 months? 7 months? 8 months?
36 weeks.
For 36 weeks, showing up every week, being ready to play, being consistent, and being aggressive with people who even look at your game for a second, and really trying to grow your meta. It can be done. I know it's difficult. I'm not trying to trivialize it, but it can be done.
That was a very interesting way to end episode. Until next time, fair listeners.
May the force be with you. Hey, Ben. Hey, Ben. Ben!
What?
Are you still there?